Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with Will T and myself, Wole. Ray Jeezy is out. What is good, Will T?
Nothing much, man. Just enjoying, me and you just had a great conversation about baseball offline. And then I'm watching the USA basketball exhibition game.
Oh, yeah, man. There's a lot going on with that. Our texts were funny about that, dog.
Yeah, they were.
And we'll talk about that, too, down the road. But, yeah, real quick, we'll get into it. But does it remind you of that Olympic team with Allen Iverson and, you know, young LeBron James and Dwayne Wade? Do you have that vibe?
No, this team is different from the perspective of there's far better shooting, outside shooting on that team.
Yeah.
And also, this is no knock against Larry Brown. Larry Brown has a very, when I've seen him coach, he is very stringent with what he wants to do offensively. Popovich is a guy who's willing to adjust to the strength of his talent. And I think that's what ultimately is going to allow this team to get the gold medal in the Olympics.
Yeah, we'll see, man. We'll see. I love Pop. You know, Pop's one of my favorite coaches. I just hope this team doesn't, you know, flounder like what we're seeing in exhibition. But it's exhibition, so there's no need to for folks to kind of be all, you know, oh, something's wrong with this team. It's exhibition, still early. This is an opportunity to iron out all the kinks. We have to also understand that, you know, other countries haven't caught all the way up, but they're better, right? Like, they're better as a whole in terms of what we've seen in, you know, because I think a lot of times we like to compare it to Dream Team 1, like the Dream Team, but we know competition is 10 times better than it was back then.
Absolutely. Totally, you know, agree with you. And also, I mean, we'll talk about it later. I'm not going to get into it.
Okay.
Now, we'll talk about it later.
Okay, okay. But, and I don't know if I mentioned, we're also part, the Urban Sports Scene is part of Empire Media, and you can check us out on Empire Media at www.empiremedia.com. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Football Team Insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today Insider Mike Jones. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Podcast DC, the new local app with hundreds of options in local news, health, and on many other DMV, of the DMV region, excuse me. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all the Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene, hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T,
let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Nats pre-All-Star break performance and what they need to do moving forward. At 8:25, we'll talk about the NBA Finals. Finally, we'll talk about, what Will T and I were talking about prior, the USA basketball team. The Olympics are approaching, and the team is struggling a little bit during exhibition. But first, tonight, Will T, tonight's the All-Star game. Briefly talked about a little bit. The Nats are represented by Juan Soto, Trey Turner, and Max Scherzer.
Then the home run derby, and we know this. Players have to change their trend. Soto may strum tonight. I think Trey Turner is going to be a guy who could conceivably compete for the All-Star Game MVP if the NL is able to win. Just because of, you know, what he brings to the table, you know, from the perspective defensively and also at the plate, you know, this year he's been far better disciplined at the plate, and he has elite speed on the bases, and he has the ability to steal bases. So I think Trey Turner's going to turn out well. And Max Scherzer, I just don't necessarily know if Max Scherzer's heart's going to be in it. Now, I know he's a competitor. Mm-hmm. I know whenever his, you know, every fifth day when he gets the ball, he's going to go out there. He's going to give you his best. But, you know, is Max Scherzer really going to be up for playing in an All-Star game that he wasn't voted in or wasn't selected by the players or coaches? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that because of what we've seen from Max Scherzer, don't you think that'd be motivation for him? Like, okay, you didn't vote me in. You know, no, I'm going to show you. Y'all didn't, you know, select me to be on the initial team. You know what? I'm going to show you what I do. I'm going to make you remember who I am. Like, you know, because he has that type of mentality, right?
He does. He does have that type of mentality. But, you know, maybe he was looking forward to having 5 days off, spending some time with the family.
Oh, man. I mean, he probably did. But I do think because of when we think of all-time greats, like you just mentioned, Wilt, this man wasn't put on the initial roster to be like the starting pitcher or be part of the team. And now he's the starting pitcher. And it's almost like you like Jordan using that as added motivation to show the other all-stars what's up, right? Now he's going to be on the mound. He's going to show these individuals why he believes that he's the best pitcher in the game.
I mean, we'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, he's starting the game. It's about to kick off. Well, is it about to kick off? It should be kicking off.
Soon, relatively soon.
Soon. I plan on tuning in. You know, if he's starting, I want to see, you know, his first, you know, I want to see him, you know, start the game. And then I'm pretty sure he'll only pitch for one inning.
Yeah, one or two innings, probably one inning.
We'll go from there. But, you know, we know one thing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Coors Field is a hitter's field.
Yeah.
Max Scherzer has given up some home runs in the early innings.
Yeah, that's true.
This year.
That's true. But he's going to go all out, man.
Tune in early.
You
know, if you're voting for the AL, tune in early. You may see some fireworks.
I will say this, that he's going to go all in. So you'll probably see 97. You know, it's not like he's not going to pace himself. So he's going to probably, you know, try to rev up, get you some high velocity. And, you know, if he's that max, I can see him getting three strikeouts in the first inning. I can see it happening. I mean, Max is that type of competitor and that kind of dude. But you mentioned something awesome about, you know, Juan Soto. Soto had a great performance in the home run derby. Just him and Ohtani in the first round. You know what I mean? Ohtani right now, the home run king in the game in the regular season. And him and Juan Soto put out a show. And like you said, Juan Soto may fall off a little bit in the actual game. And hopefully he doesn't kind of continue to the regular season. Because like you mentioned, Will T., normally what happens is people who are in that home run contest, they tend to, it takes them a while to find their swing in the regular season.
Yeah, so that I'm just going to be honest with you. Until I saw the outline yesterday evening, I had totally forgot about the All-Star game being today. And I had forgot about – no, I'm just being honest.
Yeah, don't be real. I get you.
And I forgot about the home run derby just because here's some criticism coming up. The Major League Baseball did a terrible job of promoting
I agree.
The All-Star game. Yeah. The only thing of significance that we know about the All-Star game is that it switched from Atlanta to Colorado.
True. Yep. So true.
That is the biggest thing of significance that's gotten out with regards to the All-Star game is, you know, because of the voting rules that Georgia was trying to pass, they decided to move the All-Star game from Georgia to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's for the best because we all know Colorado, thinner air, hitter's field. So there's a higher chance that we'll see a lot of runs. Specifically home runs.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that's, you know, that's what you want to see in All-Star
of
game.
Of course.
With offense.
Yeah. So now I'm watching the All-Star game. At first, I wasn't sure I was going to watch it, but now I'm going to watch it. Because, again, I just thought about the guys that I want to see. I want to see Vlad Jr. I do want to see Tatis. And I know we're supposed to be talking about Nats, and we're going to, but I want to see Tatis. I want to see Ohtani. There's actually a lot. Actually, now that I think about it, there's actually a lot of players. Juan Soto. I'm a Baltimore Oriole fan. You're going to see Cedric Mullins in the game. I want to see Cedric Mullins. There's so many people I do want to see. So, you know what? I've kind of, like, I've changed. After having this discussion with you, I've changed my thought process.
No, and you know, what's interesting, and I know we need to get back to Nats talk, but, you know, the first few names that you named, Ohtani, Juan Soto, Tatis, Vlad Jr., those are the young, up-and-coming
Acuña, but he's not going
to... MLB needs to do a better job of promoting these guys.
Yeah.
Listen, we were talking about it before the show started.
Yeah,
Fernando Tatis
Jr. Oh, my God. He's a star,
bro. A once-in-a-generation superstar. From the perspective now, I get it. You know, some people would say Mike Trout is the best player in baseball. Yes,
facts.
I will not deny you that.
Yeah.
But the thing about the difference between Trout and Tatis... Tatis has a magnet, a huge personality.
Yes,
right, and that's something that baseball does not come around very not come around every year in baseball. Yeah. So when you have that opportunity, when you have a guy like this, MLB needs to get the marketing dollars behind him and get him out here, and this will help draw younger fans to the game.
So
the
much,
way
bro.
He plays baseball.
Definitely, this.
You know, he pretty much is thrown to the. excuse me. You know, pretty much thrown to the side. Those unwritten rules of baseball, which you know, which is from, in my opinion, is pretty much kept baseball one of the sports that that isn't as marketable as it should be.
Yeah, and I agree. He's a guy that you just got to back, man. You just do. And you mentioned Ricky Henderson, Will T, and he's a guy like Ricky, like, you know, who just has that swag. You know what I'm saying? Like, he has that aura, not just skill. It's not when you want to market a player in any sport, it's not just the skill. It's what you bring to the table with the skill. You know what I mean? Like, how do you represent yourself? How do you promote yourself, right? And this kid does a great job of promoting himself. He shows you this type of this flair for the dramatic, this flair for excitement, right? He does it. He has that. To me, again, he reminds me of a Ricky Henderson. He reminds me of a Ken Griffey Jr. It's just that, you know, like when you're in the ballpark, you know, watch this kid is going to excite you one way or the other. It's if he hits this crazy home run, like, it's how is he going to walk the first? You know what I mean? Like, things of that sort. Like, is it going to be the bat flip? Or he's going to make a stellar defensive play that makes it look so easy and so smooth and so slick. So there's so much that's involved with what he brings to the table as a baseball player. I mean, if I'm MLB, man, I'm making sure he signed with Nike. We pumping Nike shoes and we pumping everything, man. Like, he would be it. Like, he would be it for MLB. Like, he would.
Not just Nike, right?
Yeah. It's so much.
California now. He's in California now. I know San Diego isn't a huge market, but, you know, he's in California. California, a very nice weather town.
Mm-hmm.
That guy should conceivably be anchoring all of your late night baseball games.
Agreed.
Like, if the Padres aren't on national TV at least once or twice every 2 weeks, that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree. No, I totally agree. It's almost like what David Stern did for, like, the NBA when Jordan came. Like, he made sure that Jordan was on TV. That's what you do. Like, when you have a player of that magnitude, a player who brings something different to the table, that you know that it's he can help promote your game. Oh man, you gotta take advantage of this, man. You gotta take, and it's different. Like, there was a group of good young players coming in not too long ago with Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, and company. But this dude's just different. Like,
who?
He's just different.
Bryce who?
You know what I mean? But this dude's just different, bro. He's just different. But let's get to the
Nats.
Yeah, he's just a little different. But let's get to some Nats talk. The Nationals are 42-47 so far. What are your thoughts of this team? You know, pre All Star break.
I think this team is, in my opinion, has overachieved.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Here's why. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at this roster kind of constructed, you know, I think overachieve is a bad word. Underachieve.
Okay.
I think they've underachieved.
I agree.
Josh Bell was your prime free agent. I mean, your prime offseason acquisition. Mm-hmm. He hasn't necessarily lived up to what you expected. You kind of, you know, he had an off year last year.
Yeah.
And you thought he would trying to come back to the mean, which was, you know, which we've seen from him previous to last year.
Yeah.
And we thought we would be getting a former all-star first baseman who's pretty young. I think he's Josh Bell's, what, 27?
Yeah, he's up 20. I want to say 28. I want to say 28. But yeah, he's young.
So you thought he would get back to the player that he was in Pittsburgh. But he, you know, he's had some, you know, some, he's been better at,
yeah,
as their right fielder. Kyle Schwarber, you know, he had a crazy June.
Insane.
I think he hit like 16 or 18 home runs in June.
And became an all-star.
He's injured now, and, you know, you thought that you were getting a guy that would hit in the number 3 or 4 slot. You know, he's had success being your leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
But you would like for him to be able to slot behind a guy like Trey Turner who gets on base, and that's another additional run.
Yeah.
The pitching staff has been erratic at best.
Yeah.
Steven Strasburg has been injured. Patrick Corbin, we thought we would see the guy who helped lead this him get back to being the guy he was, pitching like the way he was in 2019 when he helped this organization win a World Series, but he hasn't. And then Max Scherzer, played good, played decent, but he hasn't been the Max Scherzer that we've known him to be.
Mm.
And then, you know, there are other places in the lineup. Particularly, you know, you probably didn't think you would be going with Josh Harrison as your second baseman.
Yeah.
And, you know, just other things within that lineup. So I think they have underachieved, and if, you know, this team gets off to a slow start after the break,
some selling,
it probably would be the best thing in their long term. First, you know that you may not be able to sign next year.
Facts. That's so true. I'm with you. I think they've underachieved. I agree with you. I think that, you know, you mentioned Josh Bell. I think Josh Bell, the start of it was kind of, you know, iffy, but he's been super hot of late in terms of, you know, raising that. He was hitting barely 200. Now he's hitting 245. So he's, you know, he's raised his average a lot since the last couple of months. And you can see that he got his rhythm. He's getting his rhythm back. But, you know, that's a good sign for the, you know, for the second half of the season for somebody like Josh Bell. But to your point, you know, it contributed to a slow start for this baseball team. Kyle Schwarber has been good. But like you mentioned, that month, he was crazy. He was insane. It made him an all-star. You have players who you expected to kind of dominate early. I know Juan Soto didn't start off the best as what we've seen Juan Soto in the past. Trey Turner was amazing off the bat. Victor Robles has struggled. You know, I think he's hitting like 210, 215. He's hitting so low. And I'm high on Victor Robles, but that's somebody to me that if he played to his ability or halfway to his ability, offensively speaking, defensively, he's a beast. But offensively speaking, then I think this team is a lot better. But I think that his inconsistency, as a hitter, has kind of hurt this team. But I do think that they underachieved. But I think a lot of that's injuries to it. You know, mentioning Max had missed some time. Strasburg is missing time. But at the flip side, they've had some guys step up. Like, I think – I mean, Ross has been pretty good of late. He's been erratic, but he's been pretty good of late. Fetty has been decent. I think he's having a little struggles, but Fetty's been decent this year. And then you brought in John Lester, who's kind of been inconsistent, and you mentioned Corbin, who you expected to be, you know, that guy that we've seen, you know, help this team win a championship, help this team do, you know, great things last couple of seasons, and he struggled initially in the season. I think he's kind of coming back, though. He's kind of pitching a lot better. So I do think in the first half of the season, yes, a lot of guys that you've seen in the past have kind of been balling, started off slow. But on the flip side of that, I think that's a good – I mean, the flip side of that, a lot of them got hot towards the end of, since the All-Star game has been approaching, they've gotten better. So I like to see what they can do after the All-Star break. I think some of these guys will kind of flip the switch and they'll be better. And also, to be honest with you, Atlanta's going to be hurting a little bit because Acuna went down and he's out for the season with the ACL. I know it sucks, but that's a reality. And giving them an opportunity maybe to catch the Mets, who are in first place right now.
Yeah, it's going you mentioned something, and you just mentioned the Atlanta Braves, you know, with Ronald Acuna Jr. Being out of the lineup because of his injury. This, to me, this is the perfect opportunity for the Nats. I know that they have an opportunity for you to kind of separate yourself from the rest of the pack, meaning Philadelphia Phillies, the Atlanta Braves, and the
Marlins.
Florida Marlins, as you try to ascend and you try to catch the Mets. I think this is a perfect opportunity for them.
Yeah, and it's important. Also, you know, it's important for this team to get Strasburg back and not to rush him. I think that if you have a Strasburg and a Matt Scherzer together, and hopefully he's, you know, Strasburg is throwing about 95 miles per hour. He's not throwing low 90s. He's throwing 95 plus. You know, you got something, and you know you can lean on this pitching staff. And then you have an interesting. Then you would have an interesting question, an interesting problem, which pitcher you would take out of the rotation. Because, you know, Fetty has pitched well. Ross is getting hot. You mentioned, I feel like Corbin's getting better. Lester, it's kind of been a little iffy. So, it'd be interesting to see what happens when Strauss gets back and how Davey would like to kind of manage this pitching staff.
Yeah, it'd definitely be interesting, but, you know, like I said, if they get off to a slow start, I'm of the preference that this team starts to, you know.
But who would you trade?
And, you know,
who would you
look? This team's farm system is trash.
Yeah, but who would you trade though?
No doubt. Yeah.
Who would you trade though, Will? Who would you trade? Which players would you trade?
I mean, let's be honest. Are you going to sign back Max Scherzer?
Ooh, so you would? Okay. I thought you were talking about somebody like Kyle Schwarber, but it'd be a Scherzer.
Him too.
Okay.
Him too. But obviously Scherzer is the guy who can get you
a lot.
The most, yes. Even though Scherzer is, 37, if I'm not mistaken, he still can be the for a championship squad. He could still be the number two.
Oh, he'd be number one. He could be your number one. Easily.
I mean, he could be a number one. But you know, I'm just, you know, being a little bit modest.
Yeah, I know.
He'll definitely be an elite number two for you.
Definitely, yeah, easily. Oh man,
you can probably fetch for a half a season. You probably can. You probably aren't going to fetch a top five prospect from an organization, but you probably can get, you know, possibly two guys in the top 10.
I'll say this much, man. Depending on the team, if he's available, and if it's a team that really has serious championship aspirations, and they have a decent farm system, say like the Dodgers, I'm giving as an example, you can get a top five prospect from the Dodgers. Don't get it twisted. You can get one for Max Scherzer. You can, especially with the issue they have with that pitcher for the Dodgers. I can't think of his name, but if you want to. If they were interested,
Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, exactly, Bauer. Oh yeah, if they were interested, you can get a top. You can get a top five prospect from the Dodgers. And the Dodgers, their farm system is notoriously awesome. Like everybody, their farm system is amazing. So, I'm just saying.
All right, let me take a pause for the cause and do this read.
Go ahead, bro.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media, empiremedia.com.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you. But yeah, man, I'm just saying it can happen, bro. It can really happen. That is I wouldn't put that by the Dodgers, a team like that. You know what I mean? But because Scherzer, I mean, we're talking about if you think that you can definitely win a championship, shoot. San Diego has been notorious for like going all in, like in the trade deadline. Man, if someone's in their farm system that is like that and you're throwing max, I'm telling you. You can get some bodies, bro. Suns have a 2-1 series lead on the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll discuss the finals after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Sign for Aegis. Yeah, dig? Deuces. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Bole, part of Ampire Media.
All right, in the NBA Finals, the Phoenix Suns are up on the Milwaukee Bucks 2-1. Wole, so far, what are your thoughts on the Finals?
Man, it's been interesting. You know, I feel like guard play has been great for the Suns with Chris Paul and Devin Booker. They've been electric at home. On the road, you know, the Milwaukee's done with. I mean, at home, Milwaukee's done what we've seen Milwaukee do in the postseason. Players have stepped up at home. Speaking of Middleton and Jrue Holiday and the role players, they play better at home. But I've been really surprised at what in Milwaukee of what Giannis has been doing. I haven't been the biggest fan of Giannis's game, but I've seen a lot from Giannis the last two games in terms of skill. I've seen him in the low post. I've seen him make fadeaways. I've seen him make the Dirk shot off the 1 foot fade back. So I've been impressed with Giannis in terms of just using skill instead of trying to use brute strength. And I like what he's been doing in the post. Instead of shooting threes, which to me still is not his strong suit, but you know, I've been impressed with what Giannis had to do. But I mean, to me, Booker's been a dog. Chris Paul has been doing his thing. You know, it game four will be interesting to see how that pans out. But game three was impressive what Milwaukee did. But the first two games, in Phoenix was so impressive in terms of what they did and how they dominated those two games at home. But I will say this: what Milwaukee did in game three. Something I really wanted to pay attention to is not that they had to beat Phoenix. They had to put doubt in Phoenix's mind where they had to dominate the game. They dominated by winning by 20. So to me, that was something that I felt like that needed to happen.
I don't know. I struggled with this through the first, especially during the first game, you know, and during the second half of the second game, they went more to Giannis in the post, and he was unstoppable.
Yeah.
Not just unstoppable, dominant, right? Mm-hmm. There was no one, you know, not DeAndre Ayton, not Jay Crowder. There was no one that could stop him on the block. For the life of me, I don't understand. What is the fixation with Mike Budenholzer with him giving Giannis the ball at half court?
I don't get it.
Wanting Giannis to kind of create offense. Look, I think it's unfair for a lot of people that have given him the criticism, oh, he's not skilled, which I think is a flat out lie.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He's highly skilled. He's an anomaly because we haven't seen a guy who's that physically dominant on the block, being able to handle the ball and shoot threes and on occasion creating offense for himself and others off of the dribble. But you clearly have a disadvantage with him. You clearly have an advantage with him at center.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand why they don't go to a lineup where you take Brook Lopez out of the starting lineup, you add Jeff Teague, and then you allow Giannis to play center. And then you create a crazy mismatch against DeAndre Ayton and possibly get Ayton or Jay Crowder in foul trouble early, which would only be a positive for the Bucks. But
yeah, you know, it's to me, this is my thing about you have an advantage. You do have an advantage you can use with Brook Lopez. But I'm a big believer in this. If you ain't going to use him right in terms of his advantage, then don't play him. You know what I mean? Because he can be a disadvantage on the high screen situations, right? That we've seen that he can be isolated on a Chris Paul or isolated on a Devin Booker. So if you're not going to utilize Brook Lopez in terms of mismatches that he does get in the block or whatnot, then he shouldn't get that many minutes. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah,
I totally understand.
Because I'm looking at him and I like Brook Lopez, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, he's skilled. But you're not like, all right, you're just having him in the corner. So if you're just going to have a 7-footer in the corner, then you might as well play a guy like Bobby Portis, right, who can move his feet on switches and who can shoot the three from the corner and do a little bit more in terms of moving side to side or, you know, creating, making a play off the dribble. There's so much that you know, you can utilize Bobby Portis four in that situation if you're going to play that route and you can move Giannis to the five, right? So if you're going to do that route, if you're going to not utilize Brook Lopez in the block, if you, when you have that advantage, then why not, to your point, play a Jeff Teague or play a Bobby Portis?
Yeah, I don't understand it, but, you know, Mike Budenholzer is clearly the professional. He's getting paid a lot of money, him and his coaching staff. So obviously they have, you know, they may have thought this through and they just thought that this may not be advantageous to them. So, you know, we'll see. But kind of to piggyback off of, you know, what we were talking about, the Bucks won game three, 120 to 100. I hate this word.
I know.
Have the Bucks changed the momentum of the series?
Hey, you know, I mentioned it before, and I'm going to be real brief with it. I don't know if they changed the momentum, but I think they brought doubt to the Suns. I think that was most important, the most important thing. Because if they had barely beaten the Suns in game three, I feel like the Suns would have felt like, you know what? A little bit of this, a little bit of that, we would have won the game. We're still way better than this team. By beating them by 20, you have delivered a little doubt. You know what I mean? And now it's like, okay, we have to kind of adjust to what they did in game three. You know, they feature Middleton a little bit more, you know, on the ball. Like he controlled it. He was the playmaker. He was the guy that they created screens for with him, the ball in his hands, and either he can take the shot, it made him more aggressive. He can take the shot, or he can dish the ball off. So they gave Milton more touches in terms of creating offense, right? They let him do that. So there's something now that you brought a little bit more doubt to Phoenix. I mean, again, to me, just like watching the NCAA tournament, something that travels everywhere is great guard play, and the Suns bring that. So any given game, you know, you can be in trouble because they have tremendous guard play.
Not only that, here's the thing that I've kind of noticed with regards to the Suns guards, you know, during the Western Conference Finals and into the Western Conference playoffs and into the NBA Finals, they've done a great job of identifying a guy on defense who they can either stick Devin Booker or Chris Paul on, where they don't have to work as hard.
So true.
On the defensive end of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
If you continue, you know, if the Bucks continue that trend, I think that this thing will be over 4-1. You got to create a way to make
them work.
Chris Paul and Devin Booker more into the action on defense. Tire those guys out. Cameron Payne has played great.
Yeah.
But let's just be honest. Cameron Payne is Cameron Payne, and I don't think he'll be able to sustain that a level of play. An elite level of play for the rest, you know, if this series were to go four more games and go seven.
No, I agree. I do think that I think you're a great point. I think you have to find a way to make these dudes work. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not working. You know what I mean? And to a point where maybe you got to do some switches. I mean, you know, make them work. Like, set a screen off their man and let them work. Like, if Drew Holiday got the ball and they try to put somebody else on, like say Crowder or whoever is on him, make that, like, get us actual screen, whoever Devin Booker's checking or Chris Paul is checking, get that switch where you're having them now work, because now they're checking. Now Chris Paul got a switch on a Drew Holiday, or Chris Paul or Devin Booker got a switch on a Drew Holiday, or they got a switch on a say they got a switch on a Middleton or whatnot. So yeah, to your point, Will, like, yeah, make them work. And there's some ways that you can kind of negate, you can kind of change that. Like, okay, they're checking. But see, that's my problem. So say if they're checking Bobby Portis. Like, you can't put Bobby Portis in a block?
Yeah.
I mean, he can play the block. Like, he can do it. Like, that's what kills me. Or say they get a switch where they're on Brook Lopez, but you still want to feature Giannis. Nah, you can make them work. It's just a choice, man. A lot of times it's a choice.
Yeah, I think through the first two games of the set, well, I definitely the first game and the first half of the second game, the Bucks were primarily a perimeter, or, you know, offensively they were just trying to get things via the perimeter. But now you've seen them excuse me, try to, you know, get the ball in to Giannis down low, and we saw what the product of that is.
Yeah.
You know, 2 40-point, 10-rebound games for Giannis.
Facts, man. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Ampire Media, which is at ampiremedia.com. All right, game four is tomorrow night, I believe. What do you expect to happen in game four, my man?
I think Monty Williams will come out and make some adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
One of those adjustments will be possibly to get Devin Booker and more on ball action going downhill, getting him going to the basket. You know, a lot of people, we think of Devin Booker as a sharpshooter, a guy who, you know, feasts on, you know, hitting threes. But if you notice through the Western Conference playoffs and the first two games of the finals, Devin Booker, a lot of his success was going downhill and getting to the basket.
Yeah.
Right. So I expect for, you know, Monty Williams to do some dribble handoffs,
mm-hmm.
and Devin Booker going downhill, getting to the basket, you know, getting him opportunities at the line. Also, I will be interested to see kind of from a rotation standpoint, you know, if Jay Crowder gets fouls early, you know, if the Bucks come out and they kind of attack Jay Crowder with Giannis on the block, if he gets two fouls early, how does that affect his rotations for the night?
Yeah.
But on the flip side for Milwaukee, I expect that if the Bucks do kind of feature Giannis on the block, I think you'll see more double team from Phoenix. I don't think that Monty Williams will allow specifically Jay Crowder to get dominated down low in the paint without help.
Yeah.
From the Milwaukee side of the thing, I think you'll see more Jeff Teague playing with pace, coming in with that second unit and also being mixed in with the first unit. Jeff Teague is very great with playing with pace, getting the ball up and down the floor. So I think they'll try to get more fast break opportunities. I think you'll see Giannis on the low block. And one of the things I'm curious to see is if they do go with Giannis on the low block, will they play Brook Lopez on that opposite three-point corner to stop, you know, any potential double coming from DeAndre Ayton or whoever's covering off of him? And I expect to see a lot more Chris Middleton handling the ball, helping them get in sets, and also running pick and roll.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Milwaukee end. I think that you'll see that. I think you'll see Giannis in the block. I think you'll see Brook Lopez on the opposite side for rotation purposes. So, you know, if Giannis sees a double team, he can feed Brook Lopez on that corner. I expect to see pretty much this almost the same thing we saw game three. Which is the good thing about Monty, I think we've seen over the last, I mean, during this postseason, Monty Williams, the Phoenix Suns coach, he's adjusted pretty well from game to game. So I expect Phoenix to adjust to that, you know, and that, like you said, I expect him to double team Giannis. It's going to be all predicated on what Milwaukee, some of the Milwaukee players have to do, their role players. I think they're going to have folks like Drew Holiday step up and play at a high level. Middleton has to, you know, I expect Middleton to play well because he plays well at home. Players like Brook Lopez has to step up and play with that same aggression that we saw him play in the Atlanta series in the last couple of games towards the end of the series. But wouldn't be surprised if Milwaukee wins this game. I do expect Chris Paul to play at a high level because he sees the moment. It's the moment. It's about winning this championship for Chris Paul. Booker is a dog. I expect him to play well. I would like to see Phoenix feed on DeAndre Ayton a little bit more. I think he's a person that can get his points easily on this Milwaukee team. You can see it. He's a guy that can take advantage of certain matchups because of his agility and his touch around the basket. But this series has been very interesting. But I just think that throughout this postseason, and I would like to hear what you had to say about it. I just feel like Phoenix has been the most consistent team in the whole postseason.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. You know, if you had asked me going into the playoffs, all things being equal, all teams being healthy, would Phoenix make it this far? I would have said no.
Yeah.
But one of the things they have done, you know, they've been fortunate to A, not have, you know, major injuries that have kind of, you know, that have stopped them. And you thought that with Chris Paul being out those games,
yeah,
in the Western Conference Finals against the Clippers, yeah, you thought that would possibly derail them, but it didn't. That just goes to the credit of, you know, Coach Monty Williams and that coaching staff, and also those players,
mm-hmm,
who, you know, particularly Cameron Payne, who stepped in and just said, hey, there's not going to be any drop off in the level of production.
Facts.
Because, mm-hmm, one of our leaders is there. No, I wouldn't have thought that, you know, they would have been playing this consistently, but this consistently good, but they have.
Yeah, they have. They've been really impressive, really, really impressive. So, let's see. I did have something I wanted to say, but never mind. I don't got anything. I had something I wanted to add to that, but no, I'm cool.
All right. Well, let me ask you: do you feel that the series? Well, you're more, you know, you're on social media.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. I'm, you know, anti social media.
Yeah, it's fine.
Not
it's
anti,
but you're anti. But I know what you
I
mean.
Just don't do it.
Yeah, it's okay. It's all good.
I just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA Finals, you know, Game 3, the viewership was up 51% over Game 3 of the 2020 NBA Finals.
Okay.
Do you get the sense from, you know, being on social media, and I know that you're a social butterfly. Just
I am,
know,
man.
That more people are watching this NBA Finals than
last year's
2020? Everyone was stuck in the house?
You know what? I feel like this Finals wasn't promoted correctly. I don't know if you got that vibe, but I just feel like it wasn't promoted correctly. I thought that even game one, I didn't think they hyped game one like it should have been. Like, I didn't know when game one started at first, dude. I didn't even know the day of game one. I had to, like, look it up online. And it's like, oh, snap, game one is this Tuesday or something. Like, I thought they could have done better. Because I feel like if LeBron or Durant or whoever, like, you would see commercials everywhere, like, NBA Finals, game one. You know what I mean? And I don't know. Maybe I'm exaggerating it, but I feel like they could have done a little bit better promoting this series.
These are, you know, when we think of sports, you know, no one thinks of Milwaukee and Phoenix as being huge sports markets.
Yeah.
Right? But one of the things that, you know, that is fortunate for the NBA is you have one of your biggest stars in Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Fact. Mm-hmm.
Being in the finals, you know, especially him coming off of back-to-back MVP seasons, and then last year of him being the one of the few guys to win an MVP and a Defensive Player of the Year. So you know, the NBA is probably, you know, thankful for that, but also there are some compelling storylines to this NBA Finals. One, will Chris Paul, after 16 years, be able to get his first NBA Finals? Will Giannis be able to lead the Milwaukee Bucks to a championship, the first one, I think, since 1971 or something? Or 72, mm-hmm.
Since Lou Alcindor.
Yeah, so there are some compelling storylines, and then, you know, some of the matchups are, you know, are interesting.
Yeah. No, I think there are compelling storylines. I like the new faces. I think that's something that the NBA needs. Like, to me, Devin Booker in the finals and taking advantage of the moment is important. I feel like, you know, getting to see him on this, I mean, for folks, I mean, I've watched Devin Booker, I'm sure you have too, Will T, but folks who haven't on a national scale haven't really watched Devin Booker, I'm glad that he's getting this opportunity. I think by what was put out there, you know, in the Western Conference and getting to the finals, I think he's a guy that many people want to see because he has this dog mentality. Right. If you watch him, you're a basketball lover. You just got to, when you watch Devin Booker, you're like, oh, he gets it. He that dude. So I do think there are compelling storylines. Chris Paul, I think, is the main storyline. I just think it is. Chris Paul, one of the all time great point guards. And I'll say it. I'm cool with saying it. He's one of the all time great point guards, getting an opportunity to win a championship. Yeah, it's almost, I feel like this is, you know, it's something that's cool to watch. I'm watching it. You know, I'm not hating on the finals. I just do feel like I've seen other finals being promoted a little bit more. Not to say that, you know, that this, that like it's not a popular NBA finals. I just felt like I've seen more promoted. Like, even to be real with you, even like you mentioned, the ratings were down for last year, right? With LeBron and the Miami Heat, right? They were down compared to this one. Like, I feel like the NBA tried. Like, they tried hard to promote it. If they put the same energy into this, I think that to me, this could be even better. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they put that same energy into this, it could be even better. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying. I'm sure the numbers are, like you mentioned, the storyline with this series is big time to me. Because, again, you got new markets. You got Giannis, a guy who's trying to take his game to the next level as not just an MVP dude, but a champion. And you got Chris Paul, who's been an all-time great trying to win a championship. I mean, like you said, the storylines are there, bro.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I'm excited to see, you know, game four. It's going to be a Wednesday. It'll be 2 days rest in between, you know, this game, you know, from game three. I'm just super excited to see, you know, how it turns out, and I'm hoping that Milwaukee evens the series, and it's 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for the sake of a good NBA Finals, but also, I know we didn't discuss this, but the whole Maria Taylor ESPN situation.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how that plays out, because, you know, I think it's her contract ends after game five.
Oh, does it?
I believe so.
Oh. Yeah.
I don't know if it's been renewed. I don't know what they've done to kind of, you know, if they come to an agreement that she would, you know, potentially, you know, stick through the finals and, you know, handle her hosting responsibilities through the end of the finals, or what kind of compromise they came with the contract. But I'm just curious to see how that plays out.
Ah, I didn't think about that. That's a good point. Yeah. Maria Taylor. I mean, I'm always, man. I just want one day and 1 year where the TNT crew can just like host the NBA Finals, bro.
If you had something involving, you know, with that TNT, that pregame or postgame.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand if the NBA. I understand, you know, ESPN has the rights to the NBA Finals, but. If I'm the NBA, I would say, hey, man, y'all got to be a good partner on this.
Yeah.
You need to work in those guys from TNT this thing more entertaining.
I'm serious, bro, because it's just not.
Even if it's TNT having a post game, you know, having a post game show.
Yeah, seriously. Like, just switch the team. Like, you got to take advantage. Like, they should be involved. I'm sorry. They should be involved. It's just.
Absolutely.
They're just too important to important to the NBA. To be real with you, they're just too important to the NBA.
Speaking of importance in basketball, the USA basketball team fell to Nigeria and Australia in their first two exhibitions, and they got the win tonight against Argentina. Should folks be confident with this team? We'll discuss this. I'm getting tongue tied. We'll discuss Team USA after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene. The ages.
You dig? Deuces on Empire Media.
Empire Radio.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Bole. Ray G's out, and we're part of Ampire Media. That's ampiremedia.com. You can hit us up. I mean, you can hit us up there too to listen to our shows and whatnot. So make sure you check out ampiremedia.com. All right. In exhibition play, Team USA fails to my Nigerian team, and also Australia. But will team mention they won tonight? They won?
Yes, they won tonight.
They won tonight? Okay. So they won tonight. That's good. You know what I mean? They beat Argentina. I know that game was on the docket. They beat Argentina, which is cool. You know what I'm saying? Will, I'm asking you, because we were texting each other when before the Nigerian game. You asked me who my loyalty was with. Should we be concerned with Team USA, bro?
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Here's why.
All right.
This was a longer than usual NBA season. So, you know, some of the players really haven't had an opportunity to rest before they went into camp for USA basketball. That's one. Mm-hmm. Two, the USA basketball team is missing three of their senior, three players from that senior squad. Those three players were playing in the NBA Finals. Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, and Devin Booker.
Yeah.
All three of those players will be vital for this team to be able to compete for the gold medal. Devin Booker with his shooting. Drew Holiday, especially on the defensive end. And Chris Middleton with his all-around game, especially with his length on defense to provide trouble to opposing wing players. Three, coach, you know, and I alluded to this earlier, Larry Brown, God bless his soul, is a legendary coach, the only coach to win an NCAA title and an NBA title. But Larry Brown is not a guy who will structure his system around his talent, right? He has a system, and his system is the only way you're going to play. You're going to play the way Larry Brown likes you to play, or you're not going to see the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Popovich, along with Jay Wright, Lloyd Pierce, and Steve Kerr, those guys are far more open-minded with regards to offense. They will tailor a system or the plays or sets to the strength of their players, and also defensively they will give different looks and they'll try different things defensively and see what works and what sticks and what doesn't. This team has, you know, a guy who I think is one of the better leaders in the NBA in Draymond Green. And they also have another guy who's one of the better leaders in the NBA with Drew Holiday. I know it was, you know, we aren't used to necessarily the USA national men's senior team losing exhibition games or playing close games in Olympic play. We've become accustomed, you know, that's something we haven't seen, you know, since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not worried about this team at all.
I'm worried a little bit about this team only, but we'll get to why. I mean, in terms of later on, I guess. But I'm worried about it because when I look at this team, you know, in terms of, there's a lot of individuals who are scorers and they're not facilitators. It's not built like other teams that we've seen in the past. Like if you throw it, for instance, you throw in a LeBron James, you throw on LeBron James because he's a guy who facilitates. He's a passer, right? You don't have that type. Or in years, even back in the year that Kobe, LeBron, and company, they brought, like, there was Jason Kidd, Chris Paul. When, like, you have facilitators. It was a well-balanced team. You got a lot of just dogs. You got a lot of dogs, bro, in terms of scores. So it's in terms of building a team. And, Will, you coach, like, building a team. Everybody has to have their little thing, that what they do. And it's got to be a lot of sacrifices, right? A lot of sacrifices. But when you have scores, it's a little different. So I just think, to me, the team makeup is a little – it makes it hard to win international basketball when you watch international basketball, where you see a lot of these teams play as one.
All right. Well, you mentioned you kind of alluded to the construction of this team. Do you think that this U.S. basketball team is constructed – properly to win a gold medal in the Olympics?
I just don't like – I think they can win because they're talented. But we've seen already that they've, and it's an exhibition, so we just take it with a grain of salt. But in terms of what they need on this team, like, they're missing, to me, they're missing the Chris Paul, right? They got a bunch of offensive players, but they're limited in terms of their defensive stoppers, right? Like, they have, like, Draymond Green's a great defender. All right, other than Draymond, Bam is a decent defender, but in terms of a guy who's the versatility of Draymond Green, like, they don't have guys who are like dogs on defense throughout that team.
Two of those guys are in the finals.
Drew's a good defender. That's facts. They are Drew. Chris Middleton's okay defender. Like, he's not great. He's okay. Like, but Drew is a beast though. Drew is a beast. I'm not gonna take that away. Drew is a beast.
I'm not gonna say Chris Middleton is an elite or a great defender, but I think if you put Chris Middleton if you take Chris Middleton and you play him in spurts,
yeah,
that'd be 3 to 5 minute spurts, and you say, okay, Chris,
play defense.
We need you to go out there and go all out on defense and stick to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Stop this guy, shut him down. I think Chris Middleton has the athletic ability to be a great defender in the Olympics. I also think Zach LaVine, with his athletic ability,
he should be,
is another guy. And I think Bradley Beal can be a guy that can.
Ever want to play on defense? I mean, it sounds nice. He could be.
I'm saying, again, 3 to 5 minute spurts.
Yeah.
Go out there and give us.
Defensively. Yeah, I feel you. But
now,
you know,
I question to do that is Dame Lillard.
Oh, he don't play defense. He don't play defense. Like, the thing about, like, well, you know this. You got to want to play defense, bro. Like, if you show a track record of dudes who play defense, like, I'm not, it's nothing against Bradley Beal, just I've seen it here. Like, you can have all the athletic ability to play defense, right? You can, but if you just like the score, like, you tend to not care about playing defense. He's shown that, so I can't give him the nod on that. Like, I just, like Dame, like, I watched Dame play defense. I've watched Dame don't play defense. He don't, come on, man. Dame don't play defense. Zach LaVine, I do think that I've seen Zach LaVine play defense, even in Chicago. So I think he does have the ability to play defense. I've seen him try to strap. Like, I've seen him put an effort to play decent defense. And you know what? Let me take that back. I've seen Bradley Beal play defense when he's trying to take a personal one-on-one, right? We've seen that before, right? Let's be fair. Yes. Like, a personal one-on-one.
I think he can do, and I think he's capable of doing the same thing.
Yeah, I'll be fair. I'll be fair with that. I can see that. But I don't know if there's anybody on the other that he's going to feel like, oh, yeah, you're trying to go at me one-on-one. Like, to me, watching Patty Mills go at that squad, I'm like, yo, y'all didn't see that with Patty? Like, Patty Mills is an Olympic assassin, bro. Like, y'all didn't feel like y'all had to deal with Patty Mills? I know it's exhibition, but it's basketball, you know what I mean? It's competitive nature. Like, it's your competitive nature. Like, Patty Mills going at you. Go at him.
We don't know. Look, you have Draymond there, and you also have Coach Pop.
Yeah.
Coach Popovich. Those are two guys who are known for challenging
facts. Mm-hmm.
Superstar players, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
And wanting to get the most out of them on the defensive end.
Yeah.
So, I'm not saying that, you know, Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday, but I do think if you ask them in 3 to possibly 5 minute spurts, hey, go out there defensively and, you know, give me all you got.
Yeah, strap up.
You know, you have some success. Yeah. Especially if they don't have to shoulder all of the load offensively.
True. I do want to say that KD plays defense. We've seen enough of that. That I will put out. Like, KD does play defense, and he can play defense at a high level. So I don't want to act like KD don't play defense. He plays great defense. On Twitter, I'm at iMitchM tweeted about, is this team, you know, what is this? Is this team, you know, constructed correctly? My man said, no, plenty of guys that can score, but no one to defend except Draymond. I mean, Draymond's the one who believes is like the total defender. But you really don't have that often on an Olympic team, like just a flat out defender all the time. Like, you know, you can't have that everywhere. You just hope that your star players play defense. That's what's so good about when you had LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Paul, individuals like that, they play defense. They're superstars who play defense. That doesn't happen often. You got guys who are just, you know, have a selected role. But that Kobe Bryant, too, I'm sorry, Kobe, too, the late, great Kobe, all those individuals had a defensive mentality as well as an offensive mentality. This team is a little different. There's a lot of scorers. But like Will said, hopefully Pop can influence these individuals to take a role, take on a role and say, you know what, we need you to strap up and we need you to be this guy. Because we already know the star is Kevin Durant. Like, that's the star. And everybody else kind of has to fall suit around that. I feel like it'll be Kevin Durant, Dame may be number two. You know what I mean? The way this team is constructed. So players like Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine, guys who can score 30, they got to find a new way to impact this basketball team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's something that, I mean, it can happen. Hopefully it does happen. But I have one something real quick before we end the show. I mean, Bam Adebayo, you know, see, that's a Nigerian name. Dude, you didn't play for Nigeria. That disappoints me. That disappoints
he's
my
a
soul.
US citizen,
no, bro, he's a Nigerian. No, bro, that's why he lost. All right, go to your people, bro. Be an ambassador.
He's a US citizen, man.
Be an ambassador. Be an ambassador for this,
you know what?
For US, for the Nigerian basketball team.
You know what that US Nigerian game did prove?
What?
Like, not just to me, but a lot of people.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people. There are some guys on that Nigerian team who we would consider an NBA bench warmers.
Yeah,
see those guys play that good, it just
proves a point, right?
Solidifies just how we think. You know, even though we think that, you know, guys who on the end of the bench of the NBA squad are sorry, some people call them trash.
Yeah,
it just solidifies just how great those guys are.
Bro, I say this all. We say this all the time, man. That's why. We can go on and on about that, bro. That's all I'm gonna say. Like, that's why people like Stephen A. Smith call people garbage and trash. They gotta be easy. They really gotta be easy, man. I'm serious. Like, there's dudes that if a coach decided to feature, they can be all stars. That's still on that bench. They can be all stars. It's up to the coach to feature certain players. I'm saying again. We saw this with Jeremy Lin. And then, you know, then Jeremy Lin, when D'Antoni took over, when D'Antoni made Jeremy Lin that dude. Everybody thought that Jeremy Lin was the best thing out. You know what I'm saying? Till the NBA, like, NBA kind of adjusted to his skill set. But still, it is what it is. There, like you said, well, there's a lot of talented dudes out there in the league, man. Real talk. On that bench. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Ampire Media, at AmpireMedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all the Ampire Media shows as well as other great content. Appreciate everybody for listening. Wilton, you got anything to say before we end the show?
Nah, man. It's just, you know, good to be back. We'll be back next week. And thank you for anyone who caught the show live or who took the time to listen to us on via podcast.
Appreciate you. Like Wilty said, we appreciate you all. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.